This is Today's Business Leaders. Actionable advice from real-world professionals. And now here's your host, Gabe Arnold.
All right, today on the show, I have Liz Pifko, and she is going to talk to us about some legal matters, things we need to be aware of as far as business owners and entrepreneurs when it comes to our legal matters. She obviously won't be giving personalized legal advice because you have to contact her for that, but she's going to give us some good input there. So I always start the show, just looking at comments, sorry. I should start the show with one simple question to just kind of give us a starting point, and that is, when did you first realize that you were an entrepreneur, Liz?
I think it was after my sixth year as an associate at a big firm. It was, you know, the typical, I can't even say 9 to 5, because an attorney's version of a 9 to 5 is 6 a.m. to, you know, 10:30 p.m. Yeah. So I pretty quickly got over that. And, you know, once I started feeling like I wasn't challenged, I was completely in a rut. Everything was just stagnating in my life. It wasn't really seeming like it was going anywhere. I know I had to get out. And that is when I decided that I wanted to get my own firm going. But, you know, at the same time, I couldn't just get up and leave, obviously. So I spent the next 2 to 3 years just setting everything up, learning everything I could about business and marketing. And, you know, we wear all the hats. And I just spent a lot of time educating myself. And it was after 8 years as an associate that I finally said goodbye to law firm life. And I've got my own gig going on now and never looked back since.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've seen a lot of attorneys actually go out on their own and really fail and struggle. And then I've seen a lot go out on their own and do really well. What has been your experience with that? Because I think sometimes you start in a big firm, and I'm not an attorney, but it looks like from the outside, somebody's in a big firm and they got stuff coming in and they got cases and they got work. And then when they go on their own, they kind of overlooked or were unaware of or ignored the marketing that happened for their original firm that they don't have.
Right. Because when you go work for a large firm, they just basically plug you into an already working marketing machine. They are taking care of all the business aspects of running a law practice. And when they go out on their own, that's when they realize, first of all, they did not learn squat in law school about running a business. They don't know what it takes to market yourself, to crunch your numbers, to work with a team, none of that stuff. So yes, they fail miserably because while they are excellent practitioners, they're not that great at actually running a business and being mindful of everything that goes into that and juggling those responsibilities. So it's unfortunate. A lot of them get over it and they become very successful. And a lot of them just go back to law firm life and let other people handle all that stuff. You know, you've got to be cut out for it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's two ways that I've seen people emerge out of that. One is they actively learn the skills of business management and marketing, and they figure it out, and they've got enough of a runway, or they survive, or whatever it is. And then the second path, which isn't really an entrepreneurial or business answer, but it does work, is people are so good at what they do that they just, over time, the only marketing they really build is like referrals. But that seems scary to me. So for you, a couple kind of questions, and I'm going off on a rabbit trail, sorry, but we talked about how you kind of realized 6 years in that you really want to be an entrepreneur, not just work somewhere.
Right.
Did that come from somewhere like in your childhood or past experience? And then, yeah, let's just start with that.
No, it actually came solely from the realization that I was not cut out to be an employee.
Gotcha.
And it took me a really long time to realize that, because I've held jobs with employers all of my life. I didn't have a lemonade stand when I was a kid. None of that experience. I just one day woke up and said, if I'm doing this same thing 5 years from today, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need to get out. This is not exciting at all.
And so then you step out, and which obviously you figured it out at this point, or you're figuring it out like me. I try to figure it out every day. But which path did you fall into initially? Did you think that everything was just going to work and then you kind of got some hard reality, or did you step out with a plan and you knew you had to be a business owner and do marketing and things like that?
Oh, I stepped out with a plan and I ended up promptly throwing it out when things actually started happening.
Yeah.
So, but you know, the most important thing was the mindset shift, and you know, that tends to be kind of a dirty word online nowadays because some people have ruined the concept, but it's true nonetheless. You know, I was able to just start going with the flow. And once I accepted that there will be times when things are hard and I will face situations where I'm not going to know what I need to do, but I can figure it out. Like once I got comfortable with that sort of unknown and trusting myself that I can figure anything out, things just started working out.
Yeah.
Because I was not spending that energy being nervous anymore.
Right.
You know, I was actually focusing on solutions, even though I didn't know what they would be. You know, right. I can come up with solutions easily now in any situation.
Definitely. You know? And I think you mentioned something really, that's something that's been reoccurring for me the last, probably, I guess just this year so far, as you mentioned, at the 6-year mark, you realized that you were stuck there and you hated it, which to me is a lack of momentum, and entrepreneurs need to feel momentum to feel successful and feel okay. It doesn't have to be easy, but they have to feel momentum.
Exactly.
There's a big difference there. So when you stepped out and you threw away your plan, or you know, and you ran into challenges and problems, at first, did you feel like you were stuck again and then it was that mindset shift, or did you already know you were okay because you were headed the right direction? Share with us what you mean by that mindset shift, because I think that's a big, big change from being employee to being entrepreneur.
I did not feel stuck. I knew that it was going to work out because I was able to realize that every problem has a solution. And once you know that for a fact, just know that the problem has a solution. At that point, if you decide that you're going to do whatever it takes and put in however many hours it takes and go through all those growing pains of understanding things that you've never understood before, once you do all of that, you are able to come up with a solution to the problem. I just always knew, like, yes, it's a problem. Yes, it sucks right now. But at the end of the day, I'm going to solve this. I'm going to get through this and everything's going to be fine. So that was the biggest mindset shift, you know, accepting things that things will get hard, and then deciding that I'm going to push through that anyway and come out successful on the other side.
I think that's huge, because the reality is that I've learned over the past 20 years as an entrepreneur, the first 10 I screwed up all the time, but the second 10 I screwed up less, but I realized that the more successful you are, the more problems you create for yourself. And that's actually a good thing.
Yes. And you're not screwing up. You're just
as things grow, you know, we end up. Yeah. As things grow, we're excited because we have a bunch of growth and that's awesome. And then we have things break and it's like, and then you can fix them again, or you have new challenges. Like if you grow a ton, you don't have enough people, you know?
Exactly.
So there's always things like that that are a challenge. So I think it's honestly pretty interesting that you went from having an employee mindset, being an employee for 6 years, and then just deciding, hey, I'm going to quit this and go be an entrepreneur. That's a big shift. A lot of people I talk to and have on the show were like, you know, crazy entrepreneurs as kids too, and figured it out along the way. So I think that's an interesting path for sure.
I mean, if I could make the shift, anyone can.
Yeah.
I was 100% employee all my life.
Yeah. Cool. So you step out and you create your own firm. What area did you decide to focus on? Because I know there's zillions of different specialties in law. Was it the same thing that you were doing as an employee, or did you shift? And then what is that, and how do you help entrepreneurs and business owners, and what do you do?
Some of it has overlapped. So, you know, I did a lot of, right now I'm doing business, sort of outside general counsel services, which is general business law.
Okay.
Contracts, business formation, things like that. And also intellectual property being trademarks and copyrights. I'm not a member of the patent bar. That takes a very specialized education to even sit for that thing. So I don't do patents. I'm perfectly happy with trademarks and copyrights. And that's what I do now. I got into it in my old firm, but I didn't find that there was enough transactional work. So I always had to go out and get contract and business formation clients for myself, just so I don't need to spend my days in litigation, which I didn't enjoy as much. I feel like there's a lot of wasting of time and bickering with opposing counsel that, you know, instead of building something that matters.
Yeah.
You know, tearing each other down. So that didn't fly. But so I started that while I was still in the firm. And I did eventually, when I kind of started realizing that I wanted to do my own thing, I did get into some side businesses with different partners. So I was getting that business experience as well. So, you know, that definitely helped a lot. And, you know, I created a couple different streams of income, which was a great learning experience. Getting money is good too, but it was mostly for the experience that I got into those things. But, you know, I always kept coming back to the law. Like, I would never let go of that.
Yeah.
So I was doing things on the side and practicing law at the same time, but eventually it came down to, this is what I want to do. Like, even when I'm in a business with two other partners, I am always the one harping on, do we have a privacy policy? Do we have a contract for this relationship? Do we have this? Do we have that? So really, I was just the attorney in every venture that I entered. So, you know, that's how I am in business law right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I totally, totally understand that. One of my business partners is an attorney, and he's very valuable and keeps us all in trouble. So it's awesome.
Good.
what do you think are common pitfalls that people starting their business for the first time or launching an idea? What are the things that you just see all the time that could be really fixed very affordably and very simply so that you're on solid ground? Because I unfortunately have run into plenty of people when I'm doing business consulting where they don't have an LLC formed or any type of structure. They're operating by themselves, mm-hmm. and they're just open to a lot of risk. And I'm not even an attorney. That's just my opinion of what could be going on. So what do you see that are common things that are just huge red flags and stupid to do that are easily fixed that don't cost, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Well, there are a lot, but if I had to pick just a handful, first of all, I would start with either schedule a consultation with an attorney or do a basic Google search on what are the most common legal issues faced by small businesses. And you'll get blog posts on that. But just start to do some research on what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, you mentioned business formation.
Yeah.
I would, you know, evaluate what the best business structure is from my particular business, you know, LLC, corporation. You want to be a C corporation, you want to be an S corporation,
mm-hmm.
you want a partnership. What kind of business structure do you want? It's important because, first of all, it protects your personal assets from liability for business debts. So if something happens where the business gets sued or goes under or incurs a huge liability, if you have a separate entity for that business, like an LLC or a corporation, that business is considered a separate entity from you. So only business assets can be seized to satisfy a business liability. Now, if you don't create that separation, you're exposing your personal savings account, your personal assets, your house, to essentially being taken to satisfy a business debt, because you made a bad deal. And, you know, people just starting out make plenty of bad deals for that to happen. So definitely separate the business from you. So that's number one. It also has certain tax benefits. You know, you can deduct your expenses. You can, if you form a corporation, you can escape self-employment taxes and things like that. So you need to talk to a CPA about that, but just be mindful that having a business entity can also help you with your taxes. Number two, I would say, you know, one of the first things you do as a business owner is name your business, name your products, name your services. When you come up with those names, you know, before you start investing all your time and money and energy into building that goodwill, just make sure it's not, you know, owned by someone else.
Yeah.
Because if you have to go through a forced rebranding 3 years down the line because you've been infringing on someone else's trademarks. I mean, there is nothing that takes your momentum away like that. And, you know, not to mention the damages and attorney fees that you might have to pay if it comes down to a serious dispute. You know, if it's not enough for you to just stop using that name, you can be tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in the hole. So, and that usually spells the end of the enterprise.
Yeah.
Another thing I would say, written contracts for every business relationship. And I don't care if it's your mom and dad or your wife or your cousin or your best friend, especially if it's your best friend.
Yes.
Put every contract in writing. Every relationship in that business should have a written contract. And, you know, people think it's awkward and they don't want to do it. And, you know, a lot of them don't know what they're doing. They don't know how to negotiate a contract. So they're kind of afraid, and that's why they don't do it. Mm-hmm. That's probably the worst reason not to do it. You just, if there's that fear in you, that should be the sign that that's something that you need to look at and get over very quickly, because it's really going to hurt your business. You know, having a contract helps both parties. It's not me trying to push my demands and point of view on the other person. It's actually a really good opportunity to sit down with whoever you're doing business with and come to an actual agreement on all the important points. And, you know, a good contract can serve as like a blueprint for that discussion. So it's a great way to make sure that everybody agrees on everything. It's also a great way to manage expectations, you know, because when you're discussing scope of services, for instance, each party will voice their opinion as to what they want done for whatever amount is being paid. And so it's a good way to just really negotiate it down to the greatest detail. It's going to be a really simple, quick, and easy end to any and all disputes that might arise later. Because when you have a written contract, all you need to do is say, hey, here's the contract. You know, we're disagreeing, but this is what the contract says. So can we just go with that and move on? And usually it's, let's move on. Otherwise, you know, if it comes to a legal dispute where somebody gets sued, that contract will be great evidence of what you actually agreed to. So it's not going to be a pure he said, she said, and then wait for the judge to come out with a surprise verdict. You actually have evidence of what you agreed to, and you can be quite confident that a judge will rule in accordance with what's in that contract as they're supposed to. So what else?
Yeah.
Those are good. I'm trying to like quickly throw out all the legal things that I can think of.
No, you're doing great. I think those are great answers, because I'll give a couple examples from my own business and life along those lines, because I think you're totally right. Is one, fortunately, I was not an idiot when I formed my construction company years and years ago now, 15 or 16 or 17 years ago, who knows how long ago, because when I had a couple of customers stick me for $250,000 and I had to close the business, I was closing the business and my personal assets were somewhat protected. I screwed up and signed in a bunch of stuff personally, which kind of voids all that, which is another reason why I should have had an attorney looking out for me. But at least I had some level of protection there that ended up working out okay in the end. So whereas if it was literally no business and it was all run under me personally, I would have had things attached to me that would have been super hard to get rid of. And I could have had permanent, you know, liens on my bank accounts and just all that messy stuff. And I don't know how it would have recovered. It would have been very difficult. And the second example, which just to kind of reinforce what you said, is I had been working with this former client for like 4 years, And I thought we had a great understanding of, you know, everything. And I had things in writing. It's not like it wasn't in not writing. Like I had some basic stuff like in emails and basic understandings. But out of nowhere, and clients do this, no matter who it is, just like you said, if it's your best friend or a partner or somebody you worked with a long time, if you don't have it literally spelled out in the contract, then they come back and say, well, that's not what I understood, because they didn't sign on the dotted line, right? Mm-hmm. And so sure enough, this person got wacky and came back and said, hey, you know, you caused me to blow $35,000, which I didn't, because I had in writing and proof and recorded training calls that I said, do not do this. It's going to screw you up. And they did it anyway. But then they came back and it was a big deal. And like, I had to bring my attorney in and I had to, you know, work out a settlement because that was the cheapest and best path for my company. But I could have avoided that if I would have stuck to what I know, which is to have a contract. Instead, it cost me, you know, $3,000 or $4,000, which I didn't need to spend.
See, when you don't have a contract, it doesn't matter if you're right, because it's going to cost you $10,000 to prove that you're right.
Exactly.
Whereas if you do have a contract, it's going to cost you however long it's going to take you to go to your office and pull up that contract.
Very little. Yep.
Yeah. So definitely have a contract.
Always. And like you said, it's not a way of being, it's not there to be tough or mean or like negotiate something that's unfair. It's to make sure you're totally both on the same page.
Exactly.
And just makes communication clear. It's actually a positive communication tool. And people have a negative thought, you know, connotations about it, a negative mindset, because they've probably seen, they think, you know, attorneys, court, lawsuits, which is what happens if you don't have contracts.
Exactly.
And when you have a clear contract, the odds of you going to court are extremely low. It will happen. I'm not, you know, at least in my opinion, but it's just extremely low. So I mean, I can't encourage people enough to, you know, reach out to you, which we'll share your links and content and stuff in the show notes, and I'll drop it in the chat here for Facebook Live. We'll definitely share that. But I mean, I just can't encourage people enough to get things formed the right way, from your business to contracts. And a couple of kind of questions around that are, if you say somebody does a pretty standard type of job frequently for their clients, is there a way that you could set it up so they could use a template and fill in the blanks and not have to contact you about every single contract that they do every week? Or do they really need to have somebody that, in a sense, acts as their in-house counsel? How does that work?
Okay, so if I'm understanding this right, so if you can use templates, it's fine to use templates. There is such a thing as, you know, like a master service agreement, which you should always work out with your attorney, which will be like your main contract. And okay. Then you can modify that, either the agreement itself, but more with, you know, schedules and exhibits.
Okay.
For, you know, projects which may arise later under that same general understanding. I will be coming out with some products which involve legal templates that people can customize. It's in the works. I would be happy to talk to you about that in a little bit. The difference is, you know, I'll have different types of worksheets and checklists and explanations and videos to go along with that. So it's going to be very different from what you would find on, let's say, LegalZoom and similar services, which I would definitely recommend against. Simply because, you know, I've been to LegalZoom just to see what these people are doing. And you know, my first impression was, how do people even understand the questions that are being asked in order to come out with that form document? And how do people understand what's actually in it once it spits out a form document at them at the end of the process? And there's really no way they can understand it.
Yeah.
So they're not much better off than not having a contract, because having a contract that you don't understand, how do you know you're protected? So
it's riskier, almost, in some senses.
It is riskier because you think you're protected, so you're done thinking about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't want to go through a whole thing of trashing these services, but I would advise against using templates in that sense. But people ask me constantly for templates all the time, which is why I started doing this for my clients. But these are clients that I, you know, I have an ongoing relationship with who call me and, you know, we are on retainer. But I am coming out with something that would help entrepreneurs do it, like completely DIY it. It's in the works. It's just not completely there yet. So
even like you said, the setup that you have with clients that you work with on an ongoing basis is good because you can give them a template. You know their business. You know how to protect them. And you can say, you can fill this in, or you can attach an exhibit, or you can keep them safe, which I think is really important. And LegalZoom, if anybody listens, they do a great job of not really showing this, but if you listen to their commercials or if you see any other site, they say, we're not attorneys.
Right. They're document preparers.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm not attorney. So of course it's not going to protect you legally. So I mean, I've seen people form it through that and I've seen the same outcomes. Like they don't know what's in there and they're not really protected, or they're not structured right from a legal standpoint or a tax standpoint. And so they end up reforming things.
I'm so fundamentally opposed to people going to these websites, but I see that they do.
Yeah.
Like if hiring attorney is 100% out of the question, there's nothing I can say to these people to dissuade them from doing it themselves. And that is why I'm coming out with the product. Yeah. It's because it's just, I want to make sure that they do it right. And there's nothing out there that I know of right now that is so extensive in explaining everything and what all the clauses mean and how it affects their business and how it relates to like all the other clauses. And, you know, so even though I'm against the DIY stuff, some people will do it. So they might as well get the help that they need.
That's a good idea. It'd be nice if there was like a video and full explanation of this is what this means and this is how it ties into the rest. So I think you're on the right track with the product. And when it comes out, let us know so you can come back and share it. Because I would agree that the problem that you deal with, because we're entrepreneurs and we're going to go solve the problem. And if it's not fast enough or we don't have the budget for it, we're going to go do it on our own. And of all the things that you should not do on your own, and I'm speaking from experience here, people, is don't do your own legal work and don't do your own taxes. Because you will just blow hundreds of thousands of dollars. And when you do it right, you save hundreds of thousands of dollars.
It's kind of a no-brainer, but you know, if you don't have the funds, you don't have the funds, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then maybe you should still be working your day job and work on your business on the side. No, really. I mean, it's like people forget that. It's like, if you want to be successful in business, you do have to fund it. And so you either better be absolutely amazing at sales, so you're funding it, and that's fine. And if you're not, then you should keep your day job and build this up on the side and then step over when it's time, because not getting set up right is just a great way to go out of business. So.
Yeah, unfortunately, people get this impression from, you know, certain online personalities that you can just build a funnel and be a millionaire the next morning. And so they go and quit their jobs.
And it doesn't work like that.
No, it doesn't quite work out that way.
Or you might have a big poof and you might have a big skyrocket of a funnel, and then you won't have that in a few months and you don't have any sustainable processes or stability.
Yeah, or you get sued.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think is a reasonable expectation? I know this varies across the country, and we won't even talk about international, which you probably know about international, but what is a reasonable expectation of me forming an LLC or corporation from a budget expectation? Either you can quote what you may charge or what people could expect, because that would be worth knowing just from a budgetary standpoint. I don't know if you can't answer that, you can just say no, but if you can, I'd be curious.
It depends, of course, typical lawyer answer. It depends.
No, it's fine.
So it's very easy and cheap
theoretically.
To do like the most basic paperwork with your Secretary of State or Department of Corporations or whatever the state office is that deals with corporate registrations. It's rarely more than $150 just to file your articles of organization.
Okay.
And it's a very, very simple form. You literally answer like 5 or 6 questions. You know, what's the name of your business?
Yep.
Now, to get that right, you need an attorney's help, so don't punch this up. But, you know, what's the name of your business? Who's your registered agent? That would be the person that receives service of process in case you get sued. It's a person within the state. Usually it's one of the owners. What's the corporation's address? Corporate duration, always perpetual. What's the business of the LLC? It's usually business purpose, any lawful purpose. So if you fill those out, pay your $150, you've got an LLC formed. EIN, free on the IRS website.
Yeah.
And, you know, that part is easy. Now, to form an LLC without an operating agreement that lays out the relationship of the owners is kind of, I wouldn't advise it, because why would you go into a serious business with somebody without defining the parameters of the relationship?
Yeah.
You need to know who is contributing what, both capital contributions as well as, you know, what work they're going to be doing, what they're going to be responsible for within the LLC, who is going to be managing the business, voting rights, you know, all these things need to be defined. And that's where it gets a little more expensive, because that's when you need to hire an attorney and get that contract right. So I would say anywhere between, you know, $800 and $3,000,
okay,
you know, depending on the attorney you work with and how extensive the agreement is, how many partners there are, you know, how complicated the business is. LLCs are simple. Corporations are a little more complicated, just because, you know, there are shareholder rights and all of that. So yeah, plus with corporations, you'll have your bylaws, which also need to get drafted. So it can go up pretty far. So the more thorough you are, the more expensive it gets.
Yeah.
But like a complete package can be anywhere from like $3,500 to $10,000, depending on how much you want in it.
Okay. Because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when you have multiple partners, you do have to spend the time with your partner and with your attorney to clarify fully who's doing what. So it's not just random or undefined. Whereas if you're just a single owner, you can form an LLC by yourself and you still have an attorney involved, but you can be at that 800 probably budget, or maybe even less if it's just a super simple single member LLC. There's no complexity because you are the guy or girl who's running the company. It's you, right? There's no other owners.
Yeah, right. So it's a lot less time arguing about who does what. You do everything. End of story.
Exactly. From an ownership standpoint, obviously you can hire employees or bring in contractors or do a lot of other things, which you still should have contracts for. But it's not like you're getting married.
Right.
Which is the way I always tell people, like, I'm not married to my girlfriend, but we have more paperwork than anybody that's married because we have multiple businesses and rights and survivorships and death transfers and all this weird stuff that my attorney put together.
And that comes in when you're drafting an operating agreement or a shareholder agreement too, is like, what happens if one of you gets disabled or passes away, you know, like what happens to that ownership interest? Because in some state, the spouse of the owner will inherit that business interest.
Exactly. And,
you probably don't want your former partner's ex-wife to be making decisions in your business later on. So it's definitely something you need to consider and put in that contract.
Yeah.
And also like figure out how to finance a buyout should you be interested in buying out that ownership interest, especially if the business scales and, you know, that person's portion is now at seven figures. You want to think about how you're going to fund that and how that's going to be determined. So
exciting
contractual issues.
I've seen the bad side of that. I actually had somebody lose everything, a friend of mine, because of exactly what you said. It was a partner that got divorced, and then the ex-wife of the partner, there was nothing wrong between the partners. They were good. They were friends. It was great. But the ex-wife of the partner, they didn't have a good operating agreement, a good contract, and a good buyout clause. And so the ex-wife was trying to claim, you know, 50% of the business or take everything that the partner had. And it ended up working out, but they literally went through, tens of thousands of dollars with the attorney, and they had to pay her out something because it wasn't spelled out. She didn't end up stealing half the business, which she could have if they got in front of the wrong judge, because it wasn't spelled out. And I've been in court way too many times. And if you don't have it clarified ahead of time, the judge will step in and do whatever they feel like is exactly. really, I mean, they're supposed to be interpreting the law, but in my experience, you can tell me if I'm different. I don't think that all judges think like that anymore. I think that's an archaic mindset for judges. And so a lot of the times they're just like, eh, this is what I think we're going to do. And that's what they do.
I mean, I've experienced that personally as well.
I won't ask you to
comment. No explanation. You know, that's something I always had to prepare my clients for. It's like, whether it's a judge or a jury, you're never going to, you just never can't know. Predict how they will rule.
Right.
And so do as much in advance as possible.
Yeah.
Especially if you can get it taken care of in a couple grand.
Oh yeah. It's so much cheaper because then you avoid settlements. Yeah. Like even if you don't go to court, when you settle, you're paying somebody, you're paying out to the person coming after you, you're paying your attorney, and you're not working when you're focused on that and you're stressed out. So couldn't agree more.
Just factor it in as your startup cost, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Joshua had a question. He said, even with a single member LLC, in your opinion, is it a good idea to have an operating agreement, or what other things would you include in there? Would that help you protect your assets personally?
Yes, it's definitely a good idea to have an operating agreement. We call these in legalese corporate formalities, which mm-hmm. you should follow. You should operate that business as an actual business. So having an operating agreement, having an annual meeting with yourself, and keeping minutes and writing everything down and just keeping great corporate records, not just in your head, on paper, as if you were working with business partners. Because if you don't observe these mandatory corporate requirements, these formalities that are spelled out under each state's law, then there is a thing called piercing the corporate veil. And it applies to LLCs as well as corporations, which is something courts do, that is basically when they go in and look at all your paperwork and how you've been running this business. Was this just your alter ego? Or was it actually operating as a fully separate and independent business with its own EIN and its own bank account and all the contracts signed in the business's name? Not like what you did.
Not like I did wrong, which has been an expensive lesson.
Right.
That I'm barely finishing up this year.
But by the owner as representative of XYZ Inc. or XYZ LLC. So yes, having an operating agreement with yourself that spells out how the corporation or LLC will run, and then observing those rules while you're operating your LLC, if you can show that congruency and just the fact that you're actually running a serious business, that's not just you, then yeah, it will absolutely help protect your personal assets from
seizure and lien and all that stuff.
Yeah, so have an operating agreement with yourself.
Cool, I didn't know that. So good question, actually.
That was an excellent question.
Yeah. Any other questions, drop them in. We'll get them here. So pop those in. So that's definitely very good. And just a few things kind of as we wrap up and just think a little bit more about this. But one thing I've done is when I am working with my attorney or honestly anybody on a legal agreement, I always start as the business owner with writing a letter of intent or a letter of agreement that is like my understanding of what I want to be in the contract. And sometimes even, because I'm an entrepreneur and you can tell me this is stupid, sometimes I'll even operate on that letter of agreement for up to 30 days while my attorney is formalizing it. And it says right in the letter of agreement that I have people sign while they're coming in, hey, this is just our working agreement. It's only for 30 days. And then when we sign the full contract, it's going to, you know, that will be the full contract and this becomes void. I've done that because I like to move quickly, one thing. And I also like to have a little bit of a trial phase before I move into a full contract. And then also to give my attorney time, because I have one service that will turn things around to me in 24 hours, but I pay for that. And then I have my partner who's busy and an attorney, and things don't come to me next day. So what are your thoughts about doing that?
Yeah, it definitely is a good idea to have a letter of intent, especially if you're actually doing work in the interim. So you're not sitting around waiting. You are operating a business. You are serving your clients. You are, you know, working with vendors and suppliers and contractors. I mean, it's a running business. So there should be something in writing, even when the final contract is not finalized yet. Okay. So yeah, definitely a good idea. Once the contract is finalized, you know, there's usually a clause in there saying this agreement supersedes every prior writing and is the sole evidence of our agreement. So, you know, once that contract is executed by both you and your partner, that is the working contract. But it's definitely a good idea to have something in the interim, and the letter of intent can serve as the basis for your contract. I mean, that's what you would give your attorney too. You know, they need something to go off of. And it's not always a letter of intent. Sometimes your attorney will just ask you a bunch of questions and work with you on that negotiation. But, you know, having that letter of intent, it's a very common practice. And there is a good reason for that. It is a good idea.
Okay. Yeah. It's been working. I was just curious if that was a good idea. And then, because yeah, you're right. You're either going to start with something like that, which that would be a great, I don't know if you can give something away like that. That would be a great resource to people because they don't even know how to form those. But I've done enough of them that I do use that. I use something that I use all the time. And then the other thing, like you mentioned, your attorney's either going to ask you a bunch of questions, like how do you want this structured, which is one way. But I also would encourage everybody watching, drive that conversation. Don't just let your attorney say, this is what I think you should do. I mean, listen to their advice, follow, you know, obviously listen to their legal advice, but also like make up your wish list and say like, ideally I want it in this contract to be protected from XYZ. Oh, and I want a low buyout clause, or like just put everything in a document or an email to your attorney and say like, this is my whole wish list. This is ideally what I want. Then they can come back and say, oh, you can't do that, Gabe, that's not legal. Or they can say, I would advise against this because this is the liability that you could open up. But that's, I think it's good to really engage with the process and get the max value out of working with a, you know, a professional.
Right. I actually have a worksheet that I give to all my business formation clients that ask them, you know, all of these questions, and it prompts them to sit down with each other and think about issues that they've never thought of before.
Yeah.
And usually they always take an extra week to get back to me because of that. Because now they say, well, I never thought about what would happen if one of us dies.
You know? Yeah.
Just how do voting rights work exactly? Like, what are our capital contributions? Oh, 50-50, maybe not. That's not what you were thinking. Okay, well, then we need another 3 days to work this out. So,
cool.
Yeah, definitely.
No, you're totally right. And I think the other thing I would encourage people from a mindset standpoint is don't go, oh man, I gotta go hire an attorney. This sucks. Realize that it's really exciting and it's something really positive for you because you're planning for the future. You're planning for what's going to happen when something happens, or succession of the business or your family. You're protecting your enterprise. You're like building it the right way. Whereas like nobody in their right mind would go start building a house without a foundation. And that's what entrepreneurs do sometimes because they just don't understand the process.
Right. Yeah, that is absolutely correct. You know, I sometimes use this analogy, like, do you want to build a castle on quicksand or do you want to build it on solid rock? Because, you know, those are your options. And sometimes people are just frankly lazy because they don't want to deal with the legal stuff. They don't want to understand legalese and they don't want to know what contracts they need because they don't have the time. They're working on a startup, you know, like, no, I don't have 8 hours to spend on this contract. Are you serious? So there's always that pushback, but it comes back to what I was saying at the beginning of this conversation is just be comfortable with doing things that you don't want to do. If you want to become a different person, then you are going to go through growing pains. And if you want to become a serious business person who's going to be taken seriously in negotiations, you know, you need to know what a contract is, and you need to know what an LLC is and how a corporation works and what the different clauses mean. Because if you walk in and you don't know what the words mean, how seriously are you going to be taken? So just accept that you need to learn these things and you need to get better at it if you want to be a successful business person. That's all there is to it.
I totally agree.
Anybody can get good at it. So, you know, just make that decision, accept the fact that it's going to suck for a little while and just do it.
Yeah. And I'd also say, and I assume you would agree with this, that if you're going to be in business, you are going to run into legal trouble. It is part of business.
Misunderstanding.
You're going to get sued or people threaten to sue you.
Guaranteed.
You don't want to be in that position and not have a good law firm that you can retain as needed or just on retainer or whatever it is. And you don't want to be in that position and not be formed correctly legally, have proper insurances, like, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, don't wait until there is a problem.
Because it's too late and you're not covered.
At that point, just the fees alone will bankrupt you.
Yeah.
Plus the fines, you know. And, you know, another thing I wanted to add is get your website stuff in order. Like, a lot of people that find me online are people who are online entrepreneurs, whether, you know, it's e-commerce or marketing agencies or whatever. It's, if you have an online presence, make sure you have your privacy policy, which is required by law. It's actually illegal to not have a privacy policy on your website and your landing pages. Okay. Marketers, landing pages.
That's right.
You have a privacy policy. So not only are you asking the FTC to fine you, if you don't have a privacy policy on your landing page, you can get your ad account shut down by Facebook. You can get shut down by Google, and then you can say goodbye to your business, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a really not a good look when, you know, you are telling your client that you're a competent marketer, you're going to take care of them, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden they get this notice that, they're getting a sign and they can't advertise on Facebook anymore because, you know, you're operating
illegally. Yeah.
Yeah. Same with, you know, terms and conditions are not legally required, but it's a contract between you and your visitors. Disclaimers, you should always say, this is not, you know, whatever you do, not nutritional advice. This is not medical advice.
You should not rely
on this to treat your disease. You know, just make your disclaimers, because if you don't, people will do stupid things based on the information they take from your website and make it your fault.
Yeah. So. I totally agree. So lots of good advice here, Liz. I super appreciate you spending time with us. I'd like to have you back in a few months to talk about the products that you're putting out, and then also dig into more like intellectual property stuff and things like that. But always the first one, I just want to kind of get to know you and see what you're up to. Everybody that's just tuned in now, Frank, Avi, Chris, Taylor, Caleb, Sean, Megan, Todd, Joshua, Jace, Josh, the Sheep, Dallas, Donna, Thomas, welcome all you guys. Glad you're in. If you just got in now, I definitely encourage you to go watch the replay, which will be up here in a few minutes. And of course, we are going to release this normally, like we do for all our podcasts, on iTunes and YouTube and all that. But thanks so much for spending the time with us, Liz, and sharing all this great advice and info. What's the easiest way for people to get a hold of you and contact you if they want to work with you?
They can either go to my website. It's Corvinus, that's CORVINUS.com. And schedule a consultation there, or they can find me on Facebook. People find me on Facebook all the time, so I have no problem with that. Or you can shoot me an email. It's liz@corvinuslaw.com. So any of those ways will work. I respond to everything, unless it's something nasty. Awesome. I don't respond to those. But, if there's a legal issue, hit me up. Cool.
And Liz does offer a free 15-minute consult on her site. So if you go there and you're like, I don't even know what I don't know, or I don't know where to start, I'm scared this is expensive, or whatever it is, then definitely just go there. She'll spend time with you and get you on the right track. So I definitely highly recommend that. Like we said a minute ago, if you are in business, you are going to get into legal trouble at some point, because we live in a country of laws and a litigious society, and that's just the way things are. Which is better than the old world where we solved things with violence. So I'm all for it. I totally encourage you guys to check that out and grab a free consult with her. And we'll have you back on soon, Liz. So thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Today's Business Leaders with Gabe Arnold. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, For more information, visit todaysbusinessleaders.com.